Welcome to All About Art. My name is Alexandra, and I'm an art historian, curator, and writer. Within this podcast, topics relating to art history, cultural policy, the art sector, as well as a large range of other art-related topics will be covered. Conducting critical discussions, having entertaining exchanges, or just enjoying some relaxing chats? All About Art is where you'll find it all. Join me in exploring and developing cultural discourse. Welcome to another episode of All About Art. In the past 2 years in London, so in 2022 and 2023, we have seen a massive surge in small galleries opening across the city. Instead of interviewing one emerging gallerist about why they chose to now take the plunge and open their gallery, I decided to choose five of my favorites in different boroughs in London to speak to. In this episode, you will hear me ask each gallerist four questions. First, to introduce themselves and say more about their gallery. Second, what inspired them to open a gallery in London in the first place. Third, what type of art the gallery strives to champion and how they have positioned themselves in the growing gallery landscape in the city. And fourth, what is one thing they wish they could tell their younger selves when entering into the sector as a gallerist. I traveled up to North London to see Hugh Hood at Hugh Hood Gallery in Islington, then went east to see Helen Nevin at Nevin Gallery in Bethnal Green. Back down to Fitzrovia is where I visited Maribel Burens at Night Cafe Gallery, and then to Soho to see Cedric Bardawil at his eponymous gallery up on the first floor of a building on Old Compton Street. Finally, I sat down with Jack Trodd, who runs BWG Gallery, a nomadic gallery that had a home on 13 Soho Square, right off of Oxford Street, in 2023, but has conducted exhibitions all around London, north, south, east, and west, and will continue to do so in 2024. As I know one-third of you listeners are based in the UK, and 90% of you are in the Greater London area, you will probably be familiar with the London art scene, and this episode might be a fun one for you to discover some smaller galleries that you may not have visited before. But for the other two-thirds of listeners who are tuning in all over the world, which I find super cool, by the way, I don't know if my excitement for that will ever really die down, I want to give you a bit more context on the UK cultural sector from a commercial standpoint. London dominates the UK visual arts sector, which accounts for 30% of the global art market. We all know that the biggest auction houses are stationed in the capital, such as Sotheby's, Christie's, Phillips, and Bonhams, as well as blue chip galleries like Gagosian, Hauser & Wirth, White Cube, David's Wiener, Gallery Tadeusz Ropak, Skarsted, and many more. London is also world-renowned for their education in the cultural sector, with top art schools like Slade, the Royal College of Art, Goldsmiths, and Central St. Martin's, along with the best universities to study art history, such as University College London and the Courtauld. When it comes to a collector base, the so-called ultra-contemporary market, which typically refers to art by artists under the age of 40, has been incredibly successful in the last few years, which also shows a new generation of art collectors who are buying art at a different price point. Despite things like Brexit, as an article on Art News declared, London still rules the European market. Now that I've given a little bit of context on London and the art scene here, I'm going to stop my rambling. I have put some of my sources in the show notes, though, and I also want to say that if you do want to hear more about the art market, there are a lot of great podcasts that will give you in-depth information and analysis, one of my favorites being Art Tactic. Before I continue, I also want to ask listeners around the world to think about the art scene in your city. Are galleries opening all around town where you live? Is there a booming or possibly still developing art scene? I would love to hear from you if you want to reach out and tell me more. Before I dive in, I wanted to let you lovely listeners know that All About Art is on Patreon. So if you want some behind-the-scenes content, maybe a bit of merch, the chance to get one-on-ones with me and my guests, or you're simply wanting to support this project, I would be absolutely thrilled if you decided to sign up. You can do so through the link in the show notes. I also wanted to say thank you to those who have already signed up. Your support means the world, and it makes the further production, improvement, and growth of the podcast possible. And for that, I'm incredibly grateful. Also, thank you to our sponsors at Synergy Associates, the art world tech gurus, for supporting this episode's production at their clubhouse on Pall Mall. You can find more about Synergy and their facilities in the show notes. A very frosty Sunday morning is when I went to North London to Hugh Hood Gallery in Islington. I picked up some coffee on the way, as Highbury in Islington is a great place to go if you're looking for a cute cafe, a delicious restaurant, or a good wine bar. His gallery used to be called The Room, because it literally is a room. Hugh founded his gallery in 2022 and has been putting on shows with emerging artists ever since. Hi, Hugh. Thank you so much for sitting down with me today. Please introduce yourself and tell our lovely listeners where we currently are.
I am Hugh Hood at Hugh Hood Gallery, and we are at Islington, which is a really, really beautiful area in London. And we are currently sat here in my gallery.
Yeah, we're sat on the floor.
On the floor.
Let's just contextualize this for a minute, because I think we have to be a little bit real about smaller galleries. We decided, because obviously with my microphones, we need a certain like...
And only one chair. One creaking chair.
And so we decided to put the microphones on the creaking chair.
So it does not creak.
And we're having a really comfortable little sit down.
On some plastic so that we keep our clothes clean from the floor.
And as I would say as a kid, kind of crisscross applesauce, or like, I mean, not really, but you know, just sitting on the floor and having a really good time.
Keeping it real.
So I want to ask you, what inspired you to open a gallery in London?
Basically, opening the gallery came from an obsession with collecting art. Mm-hmm. It kind of took over my life. During COVID, I was a photographer, and then I couldn't be creative anymore. And so the only way I could have creativity was to start buying young artists. And it literally just became an obsession. And obviously, I live in London. This is where I'm from. So it made sense for me to have a gallery in London.
Did you grow up in London?
Greater London. Well, I consider it Greater London. It's Watford.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm classing myself as a Londoner.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love London. And the great thing about London is there's such a diverse amount of different kind of artists here. We have some of the best art schools. Everybody international comes here. It's a really good place to find new talent. And obviously I find talent outside of London and outside the UK as well, but there's just so many different artists here. It's a great little place to be,
yeah.
I think, at the moment.
Yeah, so basically you started off as a collector.
Yes, a new collector though.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about collecting art. I was just buying art that I loved, to be honest with you. And I think that's the only way you can buy art, is to buy it through a passion of just believing in the artist, and you just want it around you. And I think having art on the walls inspires you,
yeah,
every day. You can't explain it to somebody that doesn't collect art, but when you have such amazing creativity around you, it makes you see the world in a completely different way. People were like, you know, you should open a gallery, because I had, during COVID, the Delphian Gallery were looking for a gallery assistant.
Ah.
And they were, I basically never done anything in the art world before like that. And I thought it would be a good way for me to learn to be a better collector. I wasn't even thinking about having a gallery or anything like that. And then I did a...
I love how that was your motivation. Like, let me learn how to be a better,
yeah,
collector. Honestly, that's like so sweet as well, because what an ethical collector you are. Like, trying to get professional experience in the art world to be
well,
like...
I didn't know anything. Just honestly, the art world can seem like such a daunting place from the outside. And if you're not,
yeah,
somebody who ever goes to galleries, or your parents aren't big collectors... Galleries can be quite daunting, and you don't know prices, you don't know if you can afford it, kind of thing. And my budget wasn't huge. And I was just finding people on Instagram, and luckily all the people I was buying, their careers were going really well, and everyone gets in to have a good eye. And I just thought the Delphian were a good gallery. I had a Zoom interview with them, and I think I was the most excitable, enthusiastic person. And I just started helping them when they had the space in Covent Garden for like 5 months as a 2-3 days a week, helping them out, doing packing boxes, sitting behind the desk. And that kind of was where it started, kind of thing. And they were actually very supportive. They let me curate a show.
No way!
Because they said I had a really good eye, and they let me curate a show at the Delphian, and that's where it kind of started. It was never something that I was like, oh, I'm going to open a gallery, I'm going to go in the art world. It was literally just organic.
Yeah.
And then when I left there, I kind of was still, you know, a photographer. But I knew I needed to make a change in my life. And then literally last February, literally, swear to God, woke up one day and said, I'm going to open a gallery. And I had it open by April.
Oh my God. So February, March. So that's like not even 3 months.
No. And I didn't have a space. I didn't even know how I was going to do it. I didn't know any collectors, didn't really know any artists. And I kind of just threw myself into it.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can sort of say to it. It was just...
Just right into the deep end.
Yeah. I think sometimes in life you have to just throw yourself into something and just pray to God that it actually works. Because I think if you overthink it, you'd never do it. Like, once you get into it, you realize, okay, maybe I should have given it more thought. And it's not until you start doing it a bit longer that you realize even what kind of art you want to do.
Yeah.
Because your taste changes and it just evolves. And like I say, I didn't come from a gallery background or anything like that. So I've been learning on my feet, which I guess can be refreshing.
Yeah.
And I don't think I approach it like other galleries maybe because of that. But obviously I come from a creative background, so I know what it's like to be a creative. I know what it's like to be told no. I know what it's like when you are struggling and your friends are like lawyers or, you know, normal jobs.
Yeah.
And you're still like,
normal, well-paying jobs. Yeah.
You can pay your rent. And you're like, no, I will be famous. I will be successful. This will take off. I know what it's like. So I think I can relate to artists in a way like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I've got a good eye for spotting talent because... You know, when you grow up and you do like a creative industry, you can see talent in people. You can see what makes a good image. And I think that is kind of like where the gallery really started.
Yeah. Actually, what you just said about like, you know, not really fully knowing what type of art you want to show or like, and you were talking about your eye and your taste. I wanted to ask you, what type of art does the gallery strive to champion? And how do you feel it plays a role in this growing gallery landscape in London?
Well, I'm kind of limited to the space. Because obviously it's not a huge gallery.
You know, when you first opened the gallery was called The Room.
It was called The Room.
Because it literally is.
It was literally called The Room.
It's a room.
And I didn't really want my name on it at first because obviously being new, I don't know, you kind of have that imposter syndrome. And you kind of feel like, okay, I can kind of hide behind The Room. Like nobody knows who it is or what it is. But then obviously it became my name.
Yeah, more recently.
Yeah.
But just back to the question about the type of art that you want to champion and how you feel that you're space. Like situated.
But also the space limits, like you can't have sculptures in here. I mean, you've been to openings, it gets packed, they've been knocked over and broken.
Yeah.
So I'm limited to working really with paintings. But it is new emerging artists and it's people giving people kind of that first chance to show themselves for their first solos. This is not really too daunting. You're not having to make 20 to 30 paintings.
Right.
You can get away with 7-8 maximum. It's not having to be a huge amount to sell. It's not too much stressful. And it's an intimate space for the artist. And we're kind of like, I say we as in me, many personalities. I'm always saying we at the gallery.
Me and my assistant, which is also me.
Also myself.
And my curator, which is also me. And my registrar, which is also me.
Exactly. It's about giving those first chances to the young artists who sometimes might not have the opportunity from bigger galleries because their price point is much lower.
Yeah.
And if at big galleries may not give them a solo because, well, basically they didn't pay their rent. And the good thing about having a small space is it's not going to be a crazy rent in comparison to the big galleries. And you can afford to give opportunities to the new artists. It's a great place for collectors who have a good eye to be able to spot some of the artists who do come through here because a lot of them have been going on to much bigger galleries. But it's finding that buzz of somebody who has such potential to really become something.
Yeah.
That's the reason I started collecting. It was being like, wow, who is this person? Where are they going to go with it? That's the excitement of, I think, running a gallery. And that's,
I mean, it's like your deepest belief is really in the artist and in the art.
Yeah,
that's like where
100%.
Your
and because everybody's new and everybody's emerging. There's no history. So it's not based on sales.
Yeah.
It's not based on, oh, well, this person's hyped or this person's really hot or this person sells for 20,000 or 30,000. You're literally working with people who are not on that level. There is no hype. There is no buzz. And you're literally having to work from the ground up with them kind of thing. And it's about also giving them support and mentoring and just being there and just sometimes believing in somebody is enough to help them push.
Yeah.
To have somebody say, I believe in you.
Yeah.
I've seen the difference that just a simple thing like that can make to an artist. Nice to be part of that journey with them.
Yeah. Well, Hugh, my final question to you, what is one thing that you wish you would have known and you'd go back to tell your younger self when entering into this arts / you know, gallery landscape?
Well, there's two things. One would be, it's okay to fail. You know, it's from those failures that we learn. You know, people who just go through life and everything's rosy and wonderful, you never push yourself. I mean, I think people who never push themselves, those people that does have failure, those people that do get no or things don't work out, you have to go and rethink.
Yeah.
And you come back with something stronger. And if you're not pushing yourself, your art will never grow. So you do, like some artists say to me, oh, I don't want to show you the bad painters. I'm like, show me them. Let's have a look at them, because sometimes there might be something in that, which yes, the painting might be terrible, but there's things you learn from that, or what not to do, or what to do, or this part of the painting was quite nice. And then you move that on to something else.
Mm.
So I think it's okay to fail. And the other thing would be, don't be in such a hurry to become big. Nowadays, so many artists I've noticed seem to want to come out and explode. They want to be set out shows, shown big galleries. And I just feel like they're stepping into a way that they are ready to crash. You know, it's not good to just necessarily become huge overnight. You know, you want to build a strong foundation so that your price point holds itself. You know, we can see artists that were selling for like 3,000, 3-4 years down the line are being flipped for 200,000. And yes, that sounds wonderful and it sounds amazing, but there's no foundation for those prices to stay at that level.
Yeah.
You know, it's better to have a career that builds up over 10 years, where when you do get to the bigger prices, it actually means something. And you have a foundation of, okay, they're shown here, they're shown there, there's been progression, they went from that gallery to a mid-level gallery to a big gallery. And the price actually therefore equates what you've achieved rather than the hot right now. So I just would just say to artists, yes, your friend might come out of the MA, be picked up, they might be flying high right now and you might feel like you're overlooked, but doesn't mean they're the ones that will become big long term. You might become big when you're 30, 40, 50, like it used to be back in the day. You know, people weren't famous artists in their 20s. You know, it took time to build up, and I think people just need to allow themselves to understand that your time will come, and maybe you need a bit longer to get to where you want to get to. And maybe those failures will actually improve your work and make you work even harder. And therefore, long term, you might even be a better artist for it. But you have to literally get stuck in, work hard, and it takes time to build up to these things. And I'm having to learn that as a new gallery myself. And so what I'm learning is also what I'm telling the artist to learn. So I'm taking it myself.
Well, on that note, Hugh, thank you so much. I got off the station at Cambridge Heath in the pouring rain to see Helen at Nevin Gallery in Bethnal Green. Walking up to her very cool steel-studded door, I realized that Nevin Gallery is the newest of all the galleries I interviewed for this episode, as we ended up sitting and recording in the gallery during her second exhibition ever, having just opened in 2023. Please introduce yourself and tell our lovely listeners where we currently are.
My name is Helen Nevin. We are currently sat in Nevin Gallery, of which I'm director, which I opened recently on Cambridge Heath Road in East London. You can hear Cambridge Heath Road outside.
I was going to say, like, now we just heard a Mustang.
She never sleeps.
Okay, amazing. And so what inspired you to open a gallery here in London?
I mean, I love London, first of all, and like most Londoners, I love to complain about London. I resent the chokehold it has on me, and yet I just think it is one of the most exciting cities in the world. And I think one of the contradictions of London also are strangely the things that make it such a great place to open a gallery. I mean, we all know London is an expensive, huge, tiring, competitive city, and yet there's something about London, it retains this like punk energy. I really believe like there is something about London, its multiculturalness, that I think breeds genuine tolerance and open-mindedness. And I think there's always, and London's a very like future-orientated city. I think it is punk, it's interesting in rule breaking, it's interesting in innovation, it's always looking to the future, it's interested in subculture. And for that reason, I think that's why we see so many amazing young practitioners still managing to kind of work and create here, and a lot of young galleries popping up, because there is this interest in something different, something that breaks the mold. And whether it is like we're here, I mean, this is a former like mini cab office, and like setting up spaces in here in different spaces. I've been to shows in leisure centres and in old like swimming pools. And it's there's this curiosity, I think, on the part of Londoners to always look for something that's slightly breaking the mould and changing. I think it's very exciting. And it's why it still does somehow manage to nurture, despite the odds, it manages to nurture this like incredible, kind of very rich and like, developed sort of creative scene here in London.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that like I personally, I'm American Austrian. And mm-hmm. so like coming from Austria, where I've experienced a couple of galleries in Salzburg and in Vienna. Vienna is more, you know, open and
there's some cool stuff happening in Vienna, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Vienna is really amazing. But like if I think about Salzburg and things like that, like there's only really one or two galleries that I really, really love to go see. And no one is doing things in like, I remember Sophie Novikovska, who has also been on the podcast. Mm-hmm. She spoke about how she was putting on a show in like an old butcher shop.
Yeah,
like,
I went to meet Marcus.
Yeah, exactly.
And the smell stays with me forever.
Oh my God.
It was a great show.
It was really, really cool. Did you climb up those little stairs?
Yeah.
Yeah, nuts. So my next question is, what type of art does the gallery strive to champion? And how do you feel it plays a role in the growing gallery landscape in London?
So currently the gallery is supporting and exhibiting emerging artists. A lot of London-based artists at the moment. I think there's some incredible homegrown talent here that needs showcasing. In terms of, I mean, I'm showing up my last show is installation. This is painting, but also, yeah, kind of wall-based. It's kind of on the fringes of the painting and like something else. It's due to its medium, but a medium, I'm not specific, and I think there is, visually, there's a lot of differences between the artists I show, but I think there is often a red thread and a shared concern amongst the artists I work with, in terms of looking at something of a contemporary condition, I think questioning a lot of the fault lines of particularly urban life and late capitalism, interest in pop culture, this increasing blur of high and low that we're seeing that I find fascinating. I think there's incredible intersections now being explored with, intersections of kind of philosophy and like pop culture and how these two can meet. And yeah, interested in these themes of kind of prosperity and decline. And I think some of these themes can feel quite sinister and cynical, but I think there's a humor to it as well. I'm so interested in the now. I'm interested in the now, what brought us here and where we're going, but most particularly in the now. So I want artists who are really speaking to a certain contemporary condition, way of being, identity, how we feel in the world.
Yeah. I think that's really wonderful, and I feel like I have a particular interest in that as well, especially when you say that there's a humor to it, too. Mm. And I think dealing with that in a way, I mean, we were just talking about your floor, and for listeners who haven't been to see this exhibition, it's a floor that's covered in latex, and so, well, latex, yeah, black latex.
Yes, it's an industrial kind of black rubber black that also rubber, emits a very particular smell.
Yeah, and also has these connotations. You know, we were talking about sex shops and we were talking mm-hmm. about these sorts of things, as well as like how it relates to the work and the material in the work. And I think that these things are really important and interesting to talk about, whereas sometimes in more quote unquote like established or blue chip galleries, yes, there is an air of that sometimes, but it's these younger galleries that really, I'm just going to pause here because we've got a siren in the background and I think that might be a bit too loud. Although, authentic London experience.
Truly, again, Cambridge Heath Road. All day, every day. Never a dull moment.
Sometimes you just have to stop talking, you know, and just let it pass. but yeah, some of these more established galleries, they don't push the boundaries, whereas these younger ones are. And just for context, when did you open your gallery?
I am baby. I opened just over 2 months ago, actually. I started out actually working at, more kind of institutionally, actually at a big art foundation where I started off as an intern and was basically working as exhibition assistant. By the end, I was there for 6 years. But I was desperate to start working more with my peers and kind of younger and more emerging practices. So I was curating nomadically for around 2 years. and doing that. And I mean, some galleries like really generously invited me to guest curate things and hosted me. Other times, I mean, I did a show out of this gutted building site in East London. But I got to the point of 2 years, and I've had really interesting conversations with other curators who are working nomadically and the challenges and how it does feel like a great model to start out and really figure out how you work and build an audience, build relationships with artists, figure out for yourself what kind of practices you like to platform and how you like to do it. But you do hit a wall, I think, in London in terms of like the possibilities, the opportunities to do that. And I was just desperate to, every time I opened a show, I just wanted to start working on another one. And I'd be back to square zero, kind of hustling for a space. So that is what led me to start looking for a more permanent space. I found this lovely little, as I said, former cab office. She's a bit rough,
yeah,
but really gorgeous, on Cambridge Heath Road. And I opened at end of September with an inaugural show by Woodsy Bransfield. And now we're on to show two, which is an exhibition by Jenny O'Farrell. And then show three is coming up in January. So
okay, really exciting.
It's really early days, but it feels really good.
So this episode is going to be released in January. So for those listening during that time, come and see the show.
Please come and see the show.
My final question to you, what is one thing you wish you would have known and what you would go back and tell your younger self when entering into the arts or the gallery landscape?
This is a tricky thing. I'm also not a person who lives in the past very much, and I don't regret or sort of say it's something that I think maybe less something I would tell myself, but more something maybe I'd like to see changed in the future for people entering the art world. So I think there's a gap in arts education in general in regards to teaching young people more about the market and the ecology of the art world in general. It's often very based on kind of theory, but really getting an understanding of how all the moving parts work together, what consignments look like, how funding works, how auction houses work in relationship to galleries, work in relationship to foundations, to public museums. And it's something that I think speaking to a lot of my peers, I mean, a lot of us just learned a lot about this on the fly just when we started working, and it wasn't really taught in our degrees. And I think an early understanding of really like the mechanisms of the market, of, yeah, as I said, the ecology of art in general, would be very helpful, I think, for a lot of people starting out, and also give young people more of an understanding of maybe like the areas of the art world they want to work with and work in as well. And also young artists, for sure. Because so many young artists like leave art school and are kind of like, what do I even do now? So I think if I were to go back, I would, not necessarily something I would like tell myself, but I would have maybe, I think an earlier understanding of how all that works would have been incredibly beneficial. And yeah.
Well, Helen, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and contributing to this.
Thank you for asking me. It was a joy.
On to Fitzrovia, where I went to visit Maribel Behrens at Night Cafe Gallery. Fitzrovia has a special place in my heart because only a 10-minute walk away from Night Cafe is UCL, which is where I spent 3 years doing my undergraduate degree. So if any of you listeners are budding art historians or currently go to the Slade, there is a great new gallery right down the road for you to check out.
Please introduce yourself and tell our lovely listeners where we currently are.
Well, hi, welcome everyone. My name is Maribel. I'm a Dutch art historian curator based in London. And we're at Night Cafe, a newly opened gallery in Fitzrovia in London.
Just to give our listeners a little bit of context, when did you first open Night Cafe?
So the gallery opened in May. We're on our fourth exhibition right now, so it's brand new. The gallery's still an infant. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
And what inspired you to open a gallery in London?
It has been a natural continuation of what I've been doing before, which was running an online editorial and curatorial project called Where's the Frame, which was started during the pandemic as a way to support a new generation of artists entering the art world, especially during the pandemic, which was quite a tricky couple of years, especially for newly graduated artists, as a way to support them, write about them, contextualize their work, and show their work in a virtual space.
What type of art does your gallery strive to champion, and how do you feel it plays a role in the growing gallery landscape here in London?
So what I'm trying to do with the gallery is I'm trying to foster cafe culture, hence the name Night Cafe. What I really loved about cafe culture is that artists or creative across different disciplines would come together, come up with new ideas and influence each other. And what I particularly love about it is that you have different approaches coming together and coming up with new ways of seeing the world. So every exhibition in the gallery is concept driven, based around an idea, trying to make a point or raise a question, and multidisciplinary as an ode to cafe culture.
Okay, multidisciplinary. And so that's why we're sitting here and we have a variety of mediums surrounding us. We've got sculpture, we've got
A print that's on the floor.
It's going to be like another sculpture, but wait. Yeah. And then is this photography with
It's layered photography.
Layered photography.
So it's creased duralar.
Creased duralar.
So okay. Half of them have the privacy film, half of them have the creased duralar. And then there's duralar on top of the drawing as well.
That's so interesting. So does that mean that when you move around the artwork...
Slightly so.
Yeah.
It doesn't really change shape, but it has this kind of, it moves a little bit.
It plays a little bit with the light and,
yes.
And you know. Okay, that's really amazing. Because I remember speaking to the artist at your opening, which was really lovely, about the sculpture that I'm currently looking at, which is, it comprises of some wooden, I'd say, pedestals, but not in the traditional sense. They're more sculptural, they look more architectural. And on top of these two pedestals that are a little bit of different height, we have these beautiful mounds of black sand. And in these mounds of black sand, there's a glass ball.
Yeah.
And so I was immediately really, really drawn to this sculptural element, this intervention in the gallery space, which you've placed really beautifully in kind of the nook that mm-hmm. you have in your small space. And I think that it's really beautifully done because it really makes you get a little bit more intimate with the work. The works that you've shown so far, like I think that you have a real strength in finding or in believing in that more conceptual side of art, which I think is really hard to find in younger galleries nowadays to a certain extent. Would you agree, or do you think I'm kind of reaching here?
No, it's very important to me to show conceptual art and give platform to different kind of voices, mm-hmm. not just the usual suspects. I love to do something a little bit more unexpected.
And not just painting, basically. Yeah. Not that I dog on painting.
Paintings, but it's
the most commercial, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's the easiest to sell, like for you. That's I think it works. If I wanted to make a space that is very interesting for people to visit and experience art in, as I said, a more unexpected way, and I think that excites people and it excites me to put on these shows. So it might be more difficult, but
it's more rewarding for you and
yeah.
your the concept of your gallery. I think that's actually a very valuable thing to say, because I think that in London there are so many galleries that have opened, which mm-hmm. is what inspired this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's important to showcase the galleries that are doing different things conceptually and curatorially. Because we have a lot of blue chip galleries in Mayfair that are showing the more traditional things. They've got painting on the wall. And yeah, there are some sculptures and some installations. Like, I mean, the best example of this year was Anselm Kiefer at White Cube in Bermondsey. I mean, that was amazing.
Stunning.
Right?
Yeah.
But like, at the same time, the majority is still quite safe.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, what we're going to see is that galleries are going to continue playing it more safe, because we are in such a weird time.
Yeah. As a young gallery, that must be quite, like, exciting, but also terrifying.
Yeah. It's both at the same time. But, yeah, the way I see it, if things are going to be slow, then I'm going to put on the best show that I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, if anything, it's even more so a chance, a time to take risks.
Yeah. So it's not just about, I mean, and this is for people who may be listening who might be very fresh to the scene or who might not understand fully like what a gallery can function to do. But for you, it's not just about sales. It is about supporting artists and supporting your gallery with, you know, pecuniary support.
Yeah.
But it is also very much about contributing thematically to the art scene, contributing to the sector, contributing with something new, with something that makes people think and feel.
Exactly. And London has an incredible, incredible amount of emerging artists coming out from these great art schools.
Yes.
And I think that London hasn't reached its full potential yet with showing that. I think there's still a lot to be done.
Yeah.
Especially if you compare it to cities like New York, where I do think that emerging and mid-career galleries are taking more risks.
In New York?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, in the Lower East Side.
I've never been, hence why I'm like...
You American girl, I've never been...
I know, but tell me more about New York. Tell me more about like this difference between New York and London that you're seeing.
So, I mean, I can't speak for the mega and blue chip galleries because I think they're practically the same out there. But there's so many small galleries. I mean, this is not a large gallery, but there's galleries a fourth, a quarter of this size.
You're kidding.
Yeah, they put on great shows in the Lower East Side, Tribeca, and you can just walk around. There's great ones on Henry Street. They're super small. And they put on great shows. And something like, there's one show right now that was incredible. At Situations, which is a sculpture made out of ink.
Oh my God.
And it squirts ink. And it's made out of ink. And I think even the pedestal is made out of ink because ink, you can have solid ink. It's like, what? Are you
Wild.
Kidding me?
Wild.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me want to go around New York with you and go and explore some,
yes.
some galleries.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you my final question. What is one thing you wish you would have known and would go back to tell your younger self when entering into the arts / you know, gallery landscape?
Yeah, I think, and that's probably true for many people, that patience is the most important thing.
Oh my God, that's so good. I feel like I needed to hear that today, actually, because patience is not my strong suit.
We live in a very fast-paced world, and the art world seems to go around even quicker, and careers seem to pop up out of nowhere, and people seem to be killing it, but that takes years and years of practice. It takes so long to build your community. You have to constantly learn, observe, change your ways, and it takes just a very long time. And don't think, even if people seem to have great success very quickly or early on in their careers, you don't know what they've been doing in the background for years before that. So patience. Be patient.
Oh my God. Wonderful. Well, Maribel, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Not even a 10-minute walk from Leicester Square Station, you will find yourself on a very popular road in Soho. There is so much to do with theaters and bars, Chicconi's and Cafe Bohème, as well as Soho House. On the first floor of a building on Old Compton Street is Cedric Bardawil with his eponymous gallery, showing exhibitions and stories that reflect his interest in contemporary art and music since June 2022. Hi, Cedric.
Hi, Alexandra.
Please introduce yourself and tell our lovely listeners where your gallery is.
My name's Cedric Bardawil. My gallery is in Soho on Old Compton Street. So it's 1-3 Old Compton Street. It's on the intersection with Charing Cross Road. It's above a sex shop and right next to Bar Termini if anyone goes drinking.
That's an amazing context. So it's on the first floor. I want to ask you, what inspired you to open a gallery here in London?
I grew up in London and it's where I've spent my entire life. So it just, you know, it seemed like the obvious place to set up a gallery. You know, I think there's some fantastic art schools, some of the world's best art schools in London.
Yeah,
so,
there are.
You know, there again, it's a really good place to set up, to discover art. There's some fantastic museums, institutions, galleries. So it's a very inspiring city. you know, I also feel as though London's very, you know, culturally very rich. There's so much going on outside the art world. So in terms of the music scene, the fashion scene, the, you know, theatre, literature, poetry, the arts in general. So, you know, in that sense, I think it's a really inspiring place to set up a gallery, to work with artists. Artists have also always been drawn to London.
Because you've mentioned music a little bit, and I think that maybe, I mean, I might be wrong, but it may be in your answer of my next question. But I wanted to ask you, what type of art does the gallery strive to champion, and how do you think it plays a role in the growing gallery landscape in London?
So I'm showing a diverse range of art. I'm showing emerging art, discovery artists, international artists, as well as the occasional established artist. There's no particular formula for how many male artists or female artists or artists from a certain minority I'm showing, but I'm kind of just reflecting my interests and what I think is interesting and exciting, and trying not to be confined by borders or labels or you know, where an artist should sit, because I think that's what makes a collection interesting. When you show an emerging artist next to an international artist who might not have a market here in London or might not be shown in London, but then also next to an established artist who is very well known and has had museum shows and institutional shows. And so an example of a discovery artist is, or what I would consider a discovery artist, is Winston Branch, who I showed last year. He's now in his mid-70s, but he only received success over the last 5-10 years. And he's now in the Tate collection. He's in approximately 50 museums across the world, but he's still relatively unknown. And that's because he was a black man painting abstraction during a time where it was unfashionable. And, you know, he was overlooked, and he kind of ticks all the boxes. He studied at the Slade, won the Prix de Rome in the early 70s, went on to have relatively small successes, and then it turned into a teaching career. So he was teaching at Berkeley University in California and various other, you know, guest lecturing at Chelsea, at the Slade, at various other places in the UK. But really, he's only been kind of come to the limelight in the last few years. And, you know, I thought he was an exciting artist to show at the gallery.
He sounds exciting. It sounds incredible.
Thank you. I've got a few of his works at the gallery. So you've got to pop in and I'll pull them out of the back room for you. Yeah. And then, you know, established artists. So, for example, I showed Mark Wallinger last year. He won the Turner Prize in 2007, represented Britain at the Venice Biennale, had a Whitechapel solo exhibition in 2001, 2002. And, you know, he's a brilliant artist. He was such a pleasure to work with, and really was a lesson in how to kind of, in a non-reductive way, but how to simplify and how to edit an exhibition. With some other emerging artists, I'm really working with them from the studio stage of deciding what should go into an exhibition, what's suitable, what's not suitable, and you know, sometimes that's a lot of work, and it can take 8-9 months of kind of going. We kind of decide on a date, and then we'll go back and forth, and they'll show me various bodies of work, and I'll say that's great. Let's follow that direction a little bit. And then I'll see work, and then it'll be further editing. But even the some of the emerging artists, I know emerging art is a trend in itself. I'm trying not to follow trends. So the emerging artists that I show generally aren't shown by other galleries in London, and certainly aren't shown by 5 other galleries in London, which often happens with exciting emerging artists. So they're artists that I believe in, whose work I think is great, and who I think deserve a voice in London and to put on, you know, to have a good exhibition. So, another thing to add with the exhibitions is I produce publications for all the solo exhibitions, and they include a long form academic essay. So, you know, 2,500 word essay about the work, exploring the artist's practice, but also his references. And, you know, for me, that's very important, because it's the type of thing that, although some of these artists are emerging now or relatively unknown now, if in 5-10 years time they kind of make it into institutional collections or even sooner as things are happening now, then they've actually got a serious heavyweight essay to quote and to reference and to use in a, you know, historically, and to look, rather than a press release, which is just, you know, filled with jargon and doesn't make much doesn't add anything to the artwork. So, but you know, the other side of that is I want these essays to be the type of thing that, you know, perhaps our parents would enjoy reading, that are interesting. They're about the work, but they're also about more than the work. And they're not, you know, I try not to use art jargon in the essays, and you know, I work with specific writers who generally have a very generous understanding of art. But, you know, when you've got a 2000 word or 2500 word essay, you can really explore things, and you can explore what the artist's practice is about, where the artist has come from. You can kind of get into the nitty gritty of things and bring the work to life. But also it's been a nice way of, you know, artists love it, but so do collectors, having this small publication that's now part of a series. So it's a small format. It's slightly larger than a postcard, slightly different dimensions, but it's, you know, generally a 30 to 45 page or 46 page publication. And it's available for free at the gallery. So anyone who comes in can walk out with this thoughtfully produced publication. And so that's been a nice thing to add to what I offer at the gallery. So I guess, you know, going back to your question about, you know, the role that I play in the growing landscape in London, and that's obviously a tough thing to do. What can you add to what's, you know, there's so much going on in London. There's so many great galleries, so many great institutions. What, you know, what can I add there? And really, I encourage my artists to explore their practice. So several of my artists are multidisciplinary. I'll give them the platform to be able to work on their music practice, for example. So I've released two records. I'm working on the third record release, which is coming out in the spring. But really, I'll encourage them and fund the project of producing a vinyl record, getting it mastered properly, editing it, producing beautiful artwork. You know, these interesting things happen where you do something and you do it well, and the artist is then also very excited that they've now got this beautifully produced record. You know, the music world doesn't fit into these parameters of this is the way something needs to be done. So I'm trying to build up a format that is reflective of the gallery and the releases and consistent, so, and that has an identity, but yet has its own identity. The program's also event driven. So I've run all sorts of events over the last year and a half or 18 months since I've opened. And these include talks, performances, music listening sessions, gigs, poetry readings. I've done a chess night. I'm trying to think what else I've done. I've done a lot of talks.
I'm kicking myself that I haven't been to any of these events. I've only been to openings at your gallery.
You've got to come.
Damn, that sounds amazing. The fact that you've only been, well, only quote unquote, been around for since the beginning of 2022, or like the spring of 2022, right? I mean,
it's summer 22.
Actually. Summer 2022. Yeah. That's amazing. The fact that you've done this and built this and already have this amazing program going on.
Thanks, Alexandra. It's been, you know, but it's been a huge learning curve. I, you know, in the past, I tried to do everything myself. And it's kind of that's one thing I've learned, to kind of delegate and free up my time and get people who are better than me at doing certain things to do them. And there's, you know, there's various other things I've learned. But
which would actually bring me, to my next question, my final question to you, actually. What is one thing, or multiple, if you do have multiple pieces of advice, but what's one thing that you wish you would have known and would go back to tell your younger self when entering into the arts / gallery landscape?
So I'd say, you know, see a lot of art. And I would say in general, so rather than just fine art and museum shows and what, you know, I really think the more broad your understanding is, the more interesting the dialogue you have with work.
Well, Cedric, thank you so much for coming on this episode and for sharing more about your gallery, about your experiences. This was really, really amazing. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexandra. It's been an absolute pleasure to be on this podcast.
BWG Gallery has organized a multitude of exhibitions all around London throughout the last few years, ranging from pop-up spaces to display windows to a more permanent space they held in 2023 on 13 Soho Square. Now entering a new chapter in 2024, I sat down with Jack in the All About Art podcast studio at Synergy Clubhouse in Mayfair to chat more about what that will look like. Hi, Jack. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Hello, Alex. It's nice to be here at last.
Yes. I'm going to dive in with my first question. Please introduce yourself and tell our lovely listeners where your gallery is.
Okay. So, hey, Alex, again, I'm Jack Trodd. I run BWG Gallery and Agency. And the gallery for the last 6 months has been situated on Soho Square, a number 13 Soho Square, for the Londonite. It's actually quite a well-known creative space. And I took it on when I was doing a solo exhibition around the corner with an artist called Charlie Schaffer. But as of literally a few days ago, we've moved out of number 13, you know, on a very open basis. You know, it's a huge commitment, a large space, and as we'll talk about later, we quite go quite big with our exhibitions at BWG Gallery. And so it was a stretch on resource, but also, I don't know, my passion as a curator, even more than a gallerist, all these whatever fluid titles that we have now, was it became a little restrictive. So after a few, like, I had four big ideas that I wanted to realize there, and we'd done them, and I was like, oh, looking at these other places constantly, you know, the desire to find a new creative space. And so we'd found somewhere else, and it was a bit of a catalyst in heaven, really, of moving on to the next big thing. Because the model's always been very fluid at BWG and has evolved rapidly throughout the almost 3 years that the business has been there. So and so I worked in marketing for ages, but the challenge started coming after like 3 or 4 years of selling campaigns and it being really fast. So that's what I did. I went out and met brands and got the briefs and sold the campaigns, which was fantastic because you're working with creative teams and strategy teams and everything. Really, I was just being a front man, but working with all these real deep creative insights and people who were really impassioned and then doing the boring element of the job. And it was wonderful. But of all the ideas we pitched, like, it started, at least I found, going more informational than it had creative. And I started getting tired that this incredible idea that we workshopped for ages and was by far the best concept, in my ignorant opinion, was always lost out to one that was less risque or whatever. And I got very fatigued by that and pretty miserable because I felt I'm not really hitting or finding the passion that I wanted from the sector. And I'm not a very digitally astute man either. So the more I had to lean into digital mechanics, which again is very relevant in the gallery scene too, and certainly something I'm actively trying to get better at now than I was back then, now that I run the biz. But so I went down, I was like, why didn't I go freelance before and have loads more time? Because it doesn't diminish you that much. And spoke to loads of artists, went to lots of emerging shows and lots of studios, and started discovering things that I wanted to see more of and things that I didn't like.
And so I guess you've already answered my second question a little bit, but if you could delve into it a tiny bit more, what inspired you to open a gallery? So like you said, you were freelance and things, but what really led to that gallery?
Yeah, it was needing to find something new, but I had no idea what it was going to be. And it was that 6 months, you're right. I started tapping in, but it was the stuff I wanted to see a lot was often far out of reach or something I didn't know that people could. I didn't see where it fit into the commercial sphere. But I love like highly immersive and experiential shows above all else, because I would lose myself and really it would broaden my horizons and open my mind. So I'd only really gone to mainstream galleries and museums before that. And meeting these young curators who were blowing my mind with the work they were doing and just being such raw entrepreneurs. I'd only ever done that at the behest of another commercial entity, you know, and not like really done it myself beyond little creative side hustles. They weren't any, they were hobbies more than anything, you know, like the music and the podcasting and all the other things that I used to do. Dungeons and Dragons for life.
Oh gosh. we have another podcaster in our midst.
And then sort of the third element was speaking to artists and unfortunately hearing a lot of horror stories of people who had just been maltreated. I still hear it all the time. I'm sure you do as well, of just people being ill-treated. And I'm like, God, these guys are so talented, but they need commercial guidance and support. And all that stuff evolved into like, can I be an agent and an advisor for artists and these people? It wasn't a conducive model because these are people at the early parts of their careers. They need to earn money, not be asked for money. And so that quickly fell apart. And then I started speaking to some venues and I'm like, maybe I could do this myself, help them, give them opportunities, and then subsequently give them advice through working together as opposed to asking for it as consultancy. And that was really the catalyst of what ignited BWG as an agency.
And now that BWG has been around as, you know, a gallery and agency, and you went through having a permanent space for a while now in 2023, what type of art does the gallery strive to champion? And how do you feel it plays a role in the growing gallery landscape in London?
I mean, nothing's ever totally original, is it? But that slight element I was touching on earlier of really trying to unify the commercial gallery model with experiential immersive art in a way that doesn't intimidate and welcomes. It's sort of threefold, because you want people to be inspired to come in. Like, first and foremost, that's really important. And I found a lot of the barrier to entry, even when I was going to galleries, I'm an overly confident person, so I'd happily go and harass the poor person on the front desk and ask them all the questions I could about the work. People don't even want to step over the threshold of the door a lot of the time, you know. The amount of people asking, is it free to come in? And I wanted to have an element looking through that window that makes you not even ask those questions of yourself and makes you step over that, through that door, so that the art that's there is ready for you and you already feel like some of your walls of self-expectancy are torn down. So that was very important. And also just to see if it could work, this intersection of commercial and much more experiential and high production. Because, you know, we damage our bottom line a lot by doing, like, putting all this extra budget into the immersion. But the reward is out of this world. And the other element of those experiential elevations is obviously conceptually for the artist. Like, a huge part of this hardcore curation that we go for is about taking the passive themes in their work and trying to create that in the environment as well as through what you're seeing. So it's taking you from, you know, the visual and the cognitive and the experiential all together. And again, trying to strip away that commercial. You know, enough people come to shows and buy art. It's I suppose last year at the Crux is just I'm real passionate about, like, curatorial tightness and the elevation, similar to what the experiential elements do. And that curation is key. And, like, taking people on a rite of passage has become quite a word that I try to underpin. It's like, are we taking the viewer on a journey with the work and the ideas that the artist wants to convey? So, you know, I mean, conceptually, it's very centralized.
And I have one final question for you. And that is, what is one thing you wish you would have known and would go back to tell your younger self when entering into this, you know, arts and gallery landscape?
I do wonder if I'm ever going to overcome this myself, Alex. But is overcommitment and time management, you know. I think the nature of BWG's model is we do a lot. The agency on the side means we manage a lot of projects curatorial outside the business. And having come into the industry very ignorant to what's possible and what's out there and the structure, there's been so much learning and so much experimentation, which I never want to really stop, because it's quite a reflection of discovering art, right, is exploring art and questions and broadening your horizons and trying to do that practically as well. But is, yeah, not overcommitting, really assessing every opportunity. Because also being out there in the art world, being a busybody like me, you know, you meet loads of people and there's so much out there and so many impassioned people who want to achieve these great feats, and a lot will get thrown at you. And I've certainly committed to things that have ended up dragging on, or the other people haven't been as committed as you are, and you end up picking up the slack because you don't want something to fall on its face or be a disappointment, or first and foremost, to let the artist down. And so that's very, very key. Tied into that is, obviously a lot of it is learned via experience, but it's opportunity assessment. And a thing that I've done in the past year, which has helped me enormously, is get yourself some good advisors. Because I went in alone, being very headstrong and not having any experience. And, you know, certainly made missteps. It's the joy of life. But is get some trusted people who can advise you, you know, like non-exec chairs or whatever. I have someone who advises me on my big commercial decisions and someone who advises me on the sort of the creative, philosophical cruxes of my show. And those two people have become some of the best sounding boards for not making so many wrong decisions or overcommitments that then unfortunately let the stuff that really benefits the artist that we're working with sing to its full capacity. You know, want things at 100, not 80%, because we're spread too thin.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what you and I were talking about before we started the episode, and just, you know, managing time and things like that, looking at what your priorities are, but also learning how to recognize what the priorities should be, I think is one of the difficult things, right?
And I found even like I slightly overcommitted, not that it's bad at all, on charity projects in my first year because I didn't have loads of other things to do.
Yeah.
And I was supported and I'm very happy with all those things. But what it ended up was being a massive barrier to entry for some of my other projects because of the time that was already committed on those things. And like, I think working in those capacities as an advisor as opposed to a practical thing would have been smarter at the time. And, you know, and helping them find someone with that. So it's all just, re-understanding what value is. But you learn so much of that by doing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think let's not beat ourselves up for making mistakes and just be happy that we've learned from them and grown, right?
We're so much wiser for them.
On that note, Jack, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
My honor and pleasure, Alex. Good to see you again.
And that is it for today on All About Art. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave me a rating or a review as it helps more people discover the show. Also, feel free to share with your friends, or if you share on social media, tag me and get in touch. Thank you so much for listening.
Recorded at the Synergy podcast studio in central London. For more information, go to synergy.tech.